Welcome to the Land Investing Business Secret Podcast, where each short episode we talk about the strategies, experiences, and the tools to help you launch, grow, and scale your land business. Learn how to find freedom within your own business, find out ways to build consistency in your processes, and hear how other everyday land investors are winning so you can get to the next step closer to building your dream life through your land business. And I'm your host of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast by Pebble, Jesse Kwong. Hey, how's it going? It's Jesse here of the Land Investing Business Secrets Podcast. I've got a great guest here for you today. He's actually the brother of another episode I recorded of Daniel Apke. I've got Ron Apke of Land Investing Online, and we got a chance to talk about his story and really what it's like to be in a partnership from his perspective and what it's like to sort of go through the beginnings of a partnership with family member and how they built their empire, really. But it was a totally fun conversation with Ron. I really enjoyed the conversation with him. We got to get some insights about how he got started and also some of the more interesting things about running a land business with a partner. So sit back, relax, do take out a pen because I think there's quite a bit of knowledge that Ron shares on this episode. Anyways, I hope you guys enjoy this one here with Ron. Cheers. All right. I got my special guest here, Ron Apke. Ron, how are you doing?
Doing so well, Jesse. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. Now, I was a little nervous. I pronounced your last name correctly, right?
Yeah, you did. Amazingly. Okay.
So I recently had your brother Daniel on the show and we ended up talking about you and I was like, I better get his side of the story and see how things are going with him. And it's just so interesting to get to understand you guys as partnerships, as brothers, as family business owners. And there's so much to uncover here. And I guess before we even start it, if you guys are watching and listening to this is episode, I believe, 99. Ron, I have you on episode number 99. The episode that I have Daniel on is actually episode 97. Given that, you know, during this time and the date that it gets launched, nothing gets messed up. I hope those are the episode numbers. Can you sort of give us, an understanding of where you came from and how you just got into land and working with your brother?
Yeah, I mean, we've always kind of worked well together. We obviously sometimes will clash heads, being brothers, being really close in age, 2.5 years in age. We'll clash at some times, but I think that's part of a healthy partnership at the same time. But it was really like we've done rental properties. We still do rental properties, but we're looking for a niche in the business or in real estate in general and something that's cash flow heavy, not necessarily passive. I didn't care about passive because I'm fine working hard. And everyone's looking for that passive income. And I came across this and it was something that just, it just made sense to me. Daniel literally called me probably about 5 years ago and he called me. He's like, I'm looking at getting into land investing. What do you think? And it was like a 5 second thing. Like I'm in. I sold 401k. I sold my stock. At that point, I was a new investor. I just owned $20,000-$30,000 of Facebook stock. I sold that and we went all in. Like we started sending a ton of mail. We started making a ton of mistakes, but throughout that we learned a ton. And then now today we're doing anywhere from 20 to 30 deals a month.
That's awesome. You know, having a brother there and then you be able to hit the ground running and full throttle, it sounds like, did that make a difference? You know, having somebody who's there to kind of back you as well. Like, what does that feel like?
Yeah, I think having a partner's, we get a lot of people who ask us, like, should they, I never tell people to force partnerships. And that's a really big key. Like if you just go in and like, you're like, I need a partner, you might end up partnering with the wrong person. For Daniel and myself, we really bounce ideas well off each other. We have some overlapping skills for sure, but we also have a lot of differences in our skill sets, which makes it our business very scalable because we're not the same people. People think we're twins. We're not twins. We're brothers. And, we're similar in our personalities, but our business acumen is a lot different. It's very valuable. There are times when like Daniel, like it's like, wow, what's going on? Like we need to make some big adjustments and like one of us needs to pick the other one up. So I think that's the value in partnerships.
So interesting. I mean, you mentioned earlier, you guys are totally covering different parts of the, actually, let's come to that. What sort of things do you typically cover in the business and what sort of things does he cover?
Yeah. So for me, it's more operations. Like I like the day-to-day operations. I like being hands-on in the deals. I like decision-making. We do now have a COO who we're passing the reins. And that is a tough part of businesses, passing those reins for decision-making to someone else. Dan was more on the big picture things, like changing big strategies, like, okay, we're text following up right now. Do we need to change the strategy? How does this look? Getting data associated with that. And like the big picture changes, Daniel was really good at. I'm more than okay with him doing that. I'll give my input. He'll give him his input on my part of the business. But I'm more the day-to-day in terms of not necessarily doing everything for every deal, but reviewing deals, making sure things are going smooth. And just naturally, like that's how my brain works. Like I can remember like we have 30, 40 deals at once and I'll remember everything about every deal. But it's our operations person, our due diligence. We have a great team around us, which makes my job a lot easier.
I love how you guys have designated areas, but let's be honest here. I'm sure there are overlaps, which you did mention a little bit earlier. I mean, that's just going to be inevitable with any business. You guys are both founders and there's going to be areas where, you know, you will overlap and there are going to be differences in opinions. How do you value that? And what does that mean to you guys? And how do you guys sort of take advantage of that?
I think the only time the overlap is like an issue is when like we think the other person's doing something and neither of us are doing anything. Like we leave a meeting and like, okay, we need to get this done. I think he's doing it. He thinks I'm doing it. And like, crap. Okay. No one's doing it. We meet again in 3 days. Like we didn't move forward on this at all. But the value in it is like, I don't see any really disadvantage other than that when that's just a communication error. The value in it is like we both have certain expertises, but like the overlap is fine. Like some people say like you need to be completely different. We're both similar on the sales side in terms of the ability for sales. Operationally, I think I'm decently better at not necessarily reviewing deals, but like the due diligence and reviewing documents and like the legal aspects of buying land, because there is a lot of legal aspects. And I'll catch anything in any title commitment, any HUD. If something is wrong, I take pride in making sure that we catch that. So it's just there's some overlap, obviously. Decision making is the main overlap, though, honestly, Jesse. It's the buying a deal, like that $500,000 deal. Is there too much risk? Is there like, how do we value that deal?
So walk me through, if you guys are sort of difference in opinion in terms of, let's say, a strategic decision like that, how do you guys use that? And are you guys able to mold something positive out of that, you know, sort of that difference?
Yeah. I'm usually the first barrier with this, and I'll only bring Daniel in for a second opinion if I like just cannot make a decision. So I'll give him my thoughts. Like, I think this is a little riskier deal, but I think we have a really big upside. And then together we meet on it, and it matters the value. Like if it's a $50,000 deal, we're not going to put that much time into it. We'll have our COO. He pretty much, anything under $50,000, he'll pretty much make the 100% decision. But once we start getting in $300,000-$400,000 and I don't feel confident in it or my decision in it, that's when I'll bring Daniel in. We'll have a discussion, maybe 5-10 minutes, and we can make a $300,000 decision in 10 minutes. And it's really a group decision at that point.
It sounds like you guys have just a lot of inherent like trust in each other. And you guys sort of are able to carve out that space for each other. Would you say that's true? I can almost see that having to play such a huge role in your relationship, that you have that kind of trust and you're able to just leave each other to make those decisions.
Yeah, I'd say so. And we're both like, we like risk, like not like necessarily, like it's not our intention to put risk in the business, but we understand deals are bad deals. We're going to buy bad deals, whatever the situation is. Like we have a couple properties that get stuck. We're not going to lose money necessarily, but we got to like, let's get out of these deals. And I think Daniel has a lot of trust in me with that. Like from just being brothers, like you naturally have trust, like until someone really breaks that trust, like you just naturally have it. But the trust in the skills, the trust that both of us are individually going to push the business forward. Absolutely. And that's why we've built what we've built in a short amount of time. It's we can do things by ourselves and we can come together and make really big decisions for the business as well.
That's awesome. Let's rewind it a little bit here so people get some context. And we talked about it on our last call with Daniel. You come from not a real estate or entrepreneurial place. No. Tell us a little bit about where you came from.
Yeah, so I was I went into college. I'll go way back. I went into college and I got a chemistry degree. So we'll go. I got a chemistry degree. I don't want to be a chemist. I like numbers. I do like numbers. Like that's the one thing about chemistry. It's the type of science that there's some numbers behind it. So I like that. I wanted to be a pharmacist originally, and I graduated college and I'm like, this isn't going to happen. So I looked at some teaching fellowships. Ended up getting like a $30,000 scholarship, 100% to get my master's in education. I did that and I taught for 1 year of high school. And teaching high school science is not a very, it was not very rewarding for me. It was something I dreaded on a, like legitimately like dreaded, like Sunday nights were a rough time. Like I had to get started this job. And then I got into sales. So I got into sales. I was doing really well in sales. And again, like it just wasn't, and looking back, it wasn't like the job as much as like the absolute lack of freedom within these jobs. Sales can give some freedom, but this job wasn't like that. And I left that job and I actually, one of my passions, and that's why I got into high school teaching, was coaching basketball. And I got into college basketball coaching after my sales job. And I moved 1,000 miles away with my fiance, with her son. And we did that for 3 years. I made $5,000. I had a lot of money saved, $5,000 total. So I relied on my now wife. She was 100% bought in, but that's when Daniel brought me like this land idea, literally into my second year of coaching halfway through. And this was in the middle of maybe early COVID. And that's when we just went all in. Like I was taking land calls on the bus to games. I was doing like, it was just all this. And I just was completely bought in. When I dove into it, like it was never like a question whether it was going to work. It's how long it's going to take to work, what we're going to do to make it work. And just, we just went all in. Like it was no stopping at all.
I could almost see a movie. You're sitting on the bus, going to coach. You're not making much. You're trying to run a land business. That's amazing to hear that. I mean,
yeah, I remember my head coach like behind me, like I'm like, and I was answering phone calls, driving a bus with 6'8" guys behind me. And like, I was just driving this bus and like answering calls from, I remember one time I was talking to a county who a group of sellers were complaining about all the mail they were getting. And I was talking to a county and this was my first time, like, and they're talking about legal stuff. I'm like, oh crap, what am I getting into? And my coach behind me is like, after I got a phone, he's like, what are you doing? I'm like, sorry, coach, I'm just trying to make a little money. Like I was not making anything. I just had to make something happen. And my wife was pregnant at the time, so there's a little more urgency too.
Yeah, that's so interesting.
It was fun though, looking back. Like I don't have any regrets in anything I did with that, and it's a fun time, like looking back at the struggles and all that.
Oh yeah, for sure. And now it's always easier, you know, when you're out of that. But it's so interesting to hear that, you know, when you've got a kid on the way, and that you know you're really, you know, your back's to the corner. And this is, I think, this is quite common when a family's about to sprout, a lot of businesses actually, I think like there's been correlations about this, that a lot of businesses actually start taking off around that time. So I guess you fit within that data set. Yeah. But, you know, looking back at that time and making that transition, what was going through your head? Like, I mean, you say it's fun now, but like, there are some people who are listening to this show and, you know, are doing things that are, you know, they plan to not stay in forever, and they get a hint of, you know, what you're doing on this show here and the kind of opportunities there are. You know, what was going through your head?
That's a really good question. And like looking back, like I'm trying, land's the one thing, Jesse, like it happens pretty fast. Like it really does. Like, and I don't try to like tell students or tell anyone like you're going to get success in X days, because that's not who we are. And I'm not going to make like, you got to take action at the same time. I don't remember like ever being scared of like a situation. Maybe I should have been, like, maybe looking back, like I should have been fearful of the possibility of it never working, but or not working, but I never remember that. And we got our first deal and it probably took 5,000 mailers. Like we were making mistakes. We had to make a lot of adjustments, but it probably took 5,000 pieces of mail to get our first deal. And I don't know, we made $10,000. We have a picture of it in our office, but I'm not in that office. So that's a big one that we remember. But it just deals started coming in. I was living in South Carolina in the middle of nowhere, South Carolina. My mortgage was $700. Now it's impossible to get a mortgage under like a 2.5 interest rate. And now the interest rate's 8% and your mortgage is $3,000. That's a lot different. The pressure just wasn't that high because like I could live very, very low means. But I never recall like being fearful, honestly. Maybe I should have been.
I mean, do you have to give some credit to your girlfriend then and your brother for also being there in your life? Or maybe you didn't even think about it that. Maybe you guys were all strapping it tight at that time.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, we were definitely cheap. Daniel was running a couple other businesses that he was in the process of getting rid of. So Daniel had less to lose than me, I would say, or less risk in the business. But it was every single night, like sending mail, pricing mail, taking calls, doing due diligence, and it was nonstop. We hired our first employee very, very fast, the transaction coordinator, because we were making whatever, $15,000, $20,000 a month, and we were paying her like $5,000, $6,000 a month, something like that, just to take a bunch of stuff off of our plate. My now wife was very, very supportive, and we knew we had like a time clock. Like there's a time run when you need to make money from this or you need to go find a damn job. So
5K isn't going to go far in after a few more years.
Exactly. And we all knew that. And like, then we got a couple deals making $40,000. And then it's like, okay, this is working. Now let's just figure out how to scale this thing.
Yeah, that's amazing. Wow. I feel like I see you on this bus. Anyways, let's, you mentioned you're not at the office right now. So I know that you and Daniel are not even in the same city. I mean, how's that been? I have a co-founder partner as well. We don't work in the same country and we're totally, far apart. And
yeah,
I find that to be advantageous in some ways, but has that played a factor at all, you think?
In the success, I wouldn't say like, cause Daniel, he was never in Cincinnati when we were doing this. I think we would make more money, to be honest with you. Like if we're in the same city, like the energy and he comes in once a month, twice, three times every 2 months, even sometimes. But the stuff we get done when we're together, like, it's just focused time where we are moving our businesses forward, is very powerful. And sitting by someone, not necessarily every day, but I think there's definitely value in being close. You need your systems and processes though, Jesse, as you know, running a business with someone out of the country, like you need systems and processes to be tight. So if you can't just go across the hall and say, Daniel, did you get this done? Or there might be a delay in response, or maybe he doesn't pick up a phone if I'm calling him because he's 1,000 miles away. But if your systems, processes, and the people are in place to do the roles, everything else kind of works out behind it.
Yeah. I mean, looking back at it now, you know, again, relating to people who are getting started and as you were getting started, is there anything you missed about those first few transactions, those first few months? You know, maybe that you should have, I don't know, honored a little bit more or lived through a little bit more or been a little bit more present about it. I'm not trying to get woo-woo here, but was there anything that you look back, man, that was great times. And people, though they are struggling and maybe finding it challenging right now, like embrace it. I mean, is there anything that comes to mind?
I just remember I remember the highs of like getting your first few deals and like, we used an answering service. We didn't use an answering service until probably 3-6 months into the business. But we were answering the phones ourselves. Like, again, I was at basketball practice, like running to my phone and like looking at what's going on. So there are a lot of like overlap there. So I like the grinding part of the first starting of the business. Like, I think a lot of people can relate. Like, it wasn't about, not that I wanted to make money. Don't get me wrong. That's what makes a business run. But just the grinding part and like the drive, like, and doing everything myself and Daniel and myself, like you knew stuff was getting done. When you have a 50-50 partner, like, and you trust them, like we talked about earlier, you know, stuff is getting done. But yeah, the highs, I think, of the deals were just so much. Like, we have deals coming in. We've had two come in during this call, and it's like, okay, it just happens every day. And like I used to, like, the idea of making $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 on a deal was unbelievable.
It's so interesting that the way you explain, like, enjoying the grind so you feel progress is done. It's almost like you've got a positive reinforcement loop there. Rather than delegating out early on, you want to feel that you're the one pushing it forward. So what? The momentum carries forward, and you actually feel like you're making progress, and it becomes this sort of this cycle that reinforces each other. Is that sort of what kind of went on there?
Yeah, exactly. And like the way I look at it is it's hard to hire someone for a position that you're not an absolute expert in. If you're not an engineer, like you can hire some engineers, stuff like that. But like in this business, like you should learn every aspect of the business. You should become an expert in every aspect. Even if you're not a natural salesperson, becoming a really good salesperson is important. So you understand how people react on the phones. And when you hire a salesperson, it's a lot easier to train, because this sales, that's what I prided myself in when we first got in this business. And Daniel and I both did. Like we talked about overlap. It was 100% overlap when we first started, because we wanted to both learn everything. We learned I was better at getting the mail out, choosing counties. Daniel was a little better at sales, so he was doing that. And then you kind of break apart. But you start delegating from the beginning and you're not an expert in the stuff, I think the quality of your delegation is going to just be diminished.
I'm making notes here so I can make sure I can put this in our show notes here. This is all very, very valuable. I mean, you talking about not rushing the delegation and becoming experts, even if you're in partnership, you're talking about you and Daniel having a complete overlap. So I would imagine that also helped you guys give you clarity on what you're good at and what he's good at, and yep, allowed you then to easily divide up what needs to be divided up naturally, I'm assuming, down the road as you can continue to work through things, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that being said, like finding out what you like too, like that's important. Like you can only do something that you don't like for so long, in my opinion. And like Daniel liked sales a little more. I enjoyed the data aspect of it. I enjoyed the pricing. I enjoyed managing our title. Like I like due diligence. I like detailed stuff. And that's how we are very different, is I really like detailed stuff. I'm okay with that. I'm fine looking over documents and finding mistakes. Like I get excited finding mistakes in like a HUD document. Like they owe us money. They're trying to screw us over. Hey, exactly. That's what it is. Like look through a title commitment, make sure you're not going to get screwed on the insurance on the back end. But that's where you kind of like, we figured out what we enjoyed and we also figured out what we were really good at.
Okay. Awesome. There's so much to catch here. I hope you guys listening are catching all this from Ron. I'm going to switch it here a little bit. What do you not like about working with a partner or a family member? Now, I know you've only got great things to say about your brother, and he did as well, but are there certain times, maybe it's not with you, maybe there's been other partners potentially that you could have partnered with, I don't know. But what are you trying to avoid? What are some of those dangers? We talked about it a little bit earlier, but any sort of perspective on what to be careful of or what you don't like about partnerships?
Yeah, I think the number one thing where I see partnerships not work is when one party believes the other party, whether it's true or not, when one party believes the other party is carrying the weight. Or I'm saying, like, if it was me and someone else, like if I feel like I'm carrying the weight, like that is an issue, because we are 50-50 partners. We need to be putting in the same thing. That is what I see the most of people who break up with partnerships, is when one person believes, whether it's true or not, is carrying the weight of the business. So I think that, and like the goals and having, we have core values. Like we had core values before we had any employees, because Daniel and I really figured out what was working for us, what we wanted to hire in the future. We hire 100% based on core values. So that's the biggest thing, is like making sure that you guys have the same goals in mind, whether it's financial, whether it's where the business is going. Maybe one person wants to invest 100% of profits and the other person doesn't. Like the other person wants to pull cash from the business. You need to know that before you go in. Because if you go into a business and your partner wants to pull out all the cash or half the profit because they deserve half the profit, like that is an issue, because your business is going to be stalled without being fueled with money.
Interesting. Feeling that one person carries, feeling like they carry the weight, and you tend to see partnerships break up this way. Is that right?
Absolutely. I see it a lot where like, maybe it's just, they're just not holding up their role. Like maybe it's not as much like they're, viewing it as they're doing more. Like the other person is the salesperson. You look at the calls and you review and like, they're not making any calls or they're not responding to these people for 24 hours. As you know, to get deals, you need to be responsive, like very, very responsive. And that's something we take extreme pride in. And that's where it's something I see, like one person's a salesperson. Usually the other person is a data person. It's very normal. If the data person sees that salesperson's not getting deals closed, that's on the salesperson. That is going to really hurt your business.
Right, right. going a little bit further with that, and just for all you listeners, I don't talk to my guests really. I mean, we had a couple sentences before we even hit the record button here, Ron. And so I don't even know if you have an answer for this, but I'm curious to know, you know, you and your brother or with a partner or whoever, do you guys have an exit strategy in case you guys do come across a conflict, whatever it is within the family, personally, or in the business? What does that look like? And do you even have one in place? I don't even know.
No, we don't. It got me thinking as you're talking, like, okay, something could obviously happen. Obviously, we're 50-50, or we're our 50-50 partners in all these businesses. But yeah, I mean, no, we don't. I mean, I would assume liquidation as fast as possible would be the main thing. And when you have a couple $1 million of assets or $5 million of assets, like it can be a long process if you're trying to liquidate, and you might lose a lot of money by liquidating quickly. No, to answer your question, no.
I didn't mean to put you on the spot. It's
no,
just
you're
something
fine.
I recall when I went to school, we had a course called family business. And it was one of the biggest issues that was brought up. A fellow named David Bentel, he owns a lot of the buildings out here in Vancouver, but it was a Bentel family that did a lot of this. And he, I guess his family had a lot of issues and turmoil and whatever, and ended up breaking up the business. But it was something that got really stressed upon, like exit strategies, mm-hmm. how we keep conversations, even in the dinner table with families out, you know, business out of that conversation. It was just a lot of interesting things. And I think family business is probably one of the most strongest units of business, having family members, but it can also be very difficult with family as well. Mm-hmm. So I was just wondering if you thought about that, and maybe that's something you guys might consider, but I know you guys are in good standing. Oh, it's always tough. I mean, let's be honest. It's always tough to have tough conversations, whether family or not. You know, we've certainly gone through that in our business. I don't know if have you guys sort of had tough conversations? I mean, you guys sound so aligned. I know a lot of people almost mistaken you guys as twins, but have you kind of gone through there, and how would you navigate it if you have to do some tough conversations with your brother?
Yeah, I can't remember anything. Like, it's just, things don't bottle up with us. And that's why it probably doesn't feel like we've had any crazy tough conversations. Like, we'll meet once a day, once every 2 days, and like have a conversation, but it never like, okay, we're biting our tongue and then this is going to build up. And then we have some crazy outbreak. Like that's not how it is. We're both like very to the point, like we need to change this. And that, I think, minimizes those long time like buildups of anger. And that's where people in partnerships, I think, can go wrong. Like they're bitter towards their partner. The partner might, like if I had that against Dana, like it's just telling him like, listen, dude, like we got to pick this up or we got to do this. And I think that is the best strategy, because the other person might not know that they're not living up to their end or that the other person's unhappy. And I think being as transparent, that's one of our core values, is transparency in our business with all of our employees. Like we do not want people BSing us or lying to us, any employees. Like that is a very, very fireable offense in our companies. But being transparent with each other, I think, is really important.
All right. So you heard it on this episode here with Ron, how he talks about with any business, it all comes down to processes, especially when you have team members, or especially when you are looking for freedom within your own land business. It's what we lean heavily into when we're building out what Pebble is. Pebble is a full land investing platform. It is to help streamline your land investing business. It really is your mission control center for your land business to build repeatable processes. That is what it's all about at the end of the day. It's the unsexy part that a lot of people don't talk about when it comes to building a land business. And that's all we talk about here at Pebble. So if you're interested in learning more about Pebble, how it can help you save time, how it can actually let you grow the business so you're not working in it and an operator in it, where you're pulling yourself out of the business strategically. Doesn't matter if you're starting yourself and you're just getting started, to somebody who has done a lot of deals. Systemizing is important wherever you are. Even, again, as you're getting started, how do you create processes so you can actually start introducing team members in? You probably heard on this episode here, Ron hired fairly early on with his team. So anyways, make sure you head over to pebblerei.com, hit see a demo. There's a button on the top right of the site, or it's scattered all over. You can see how Pebble works, or hop on a call with me then, and we'll talk a little bit more about how it might look like for you to build processes for your land investing business. Anyways, enjoy the rest of this show here. I think communication in general, I think that's where most arguments start from, is the lack of communication. I'm interested to hear about, you know, I've got a couple questions left here, but you've hired a COO early on, right? Oh, no, is that early on, you said?
He's about 6 months in. So,
recently. Yeah. So you're offloading a lot of things. How does that play in a dynamic with you and your brother? And I'm sure it's obviously a positive thing. And what kind of things does a COO look after? I mean, I'm sure a lot of people are wondering, okay, a COO, but what do they actually do in the Lazarus business for you guys specifically? Mm-hmm.
So the hardest thing in this business is getting a decision maker, getting someone to, because there's very few people, even realtors, like we have land realtors who cannot evaluate land prices. And this was actually one of our students. Talk about like how quickly we make decisions. Dan and I were having a meeting, like one of our daily meetings. And we said, Anthony would like help our business. And he was a student. He was doing well. He lived in California, but we're also like, we don't want someone to be in California and us be in Ohio. We called Anthony up. We're like, would you ever consider working for us? He's like, could I work in California? We're like, no. And then literally by the end of the day, we sent him an offer letter. The next day he agreed to move him, his fiance, and his kid from California to Ohio. And he will be here in the next couple months. We gave him 9 months to move, but it's just a quick decision-making thing. And he's going to be he makes decisions on purchases. That is the biggest thing and the hardest thing to outsource. I trust him fully with everything. We've done a lot of business with him before he was our employee. And that's the biggest thing with COO. We do a lot of deal funding. We do a lot of our own deals, making decisions on those, understanding the business model from how we've taught it, from how we do it, I think was the most valuable thing. And he takes so much off of our plate on a daily basis.
That's awesome. That's awesome. Ron, I appreciate you so much. Is there anything else you'd like? But I get into this part of the show called the quickfire round. But before that, is there anything else that you'd like to share here? Any thoughts in general?
Yeah, I think we kind of went high level on this. So if you guys are looking to get started in this business, like it is what it sounds like. Like these deals, these aren't myths that we talk about when we talk about buying for $30,000, selling for $60,000, buying for $50,000. We have a deal right now we just purchased we're finishing up the purchase, $500,000. We're listing for $1.2 million. Like those deals are out there, guys. And it's not a long startup process. If you're looking to, if you have a pregnant wife, whatever the situation is, you're like, I don't want to go to.
You're on a boat bus as a basketball.
Exactly. You don't want to go to work. Yeah. Whatever the situation is, like this is it's a high level opportunity. And that's what Dan and I always talk about. Like land investing is a high level opportunity. Even if you're not getting into flipping, like the future of land investing is subdivides, projects, all this other stuff where you can make millions of dollars on individual deals. But it's an amazing opportunity for sure.
All right, Ron, I come to the quick fire round here. I've got some questions that aren't really related to anything, but just to kind of get you to know you as a person. So outside of land, what do you like doing?
Working out. I love lifting. Lifting's probably my biggest one. Lifting, hang out with my family. Like I said, like I like being home. I'm home right now. Some people like going to work to get away from their family. I love being around my family as much as I possibly can. And that's why I like this business so much.
It's the free. We're all here for some form of freedom. I mean, absolutely. We'd be lying if that's not, you know, if we didn't say that. So I'm glad you're fully exercising that. Ron, do you read books?
Not as much as I should.
Okay. Do you have one that you've read in the past that you recommend, whether fiction or nonfiction?
Yeah, probably The Energy Bus. The Energy Bus is one that I was reading towards that transition from when I was going from basketball coach. Energy Bus was a really good one. I don't remember the author off the top of my head, but just all about energy in general, like how to transfer energy in terms of all that and just the positive mindset of everything you do. I think it's so important.
It's called Energy Bus.
The Energy Bus, yes.
The energy business. Okay, we'll add that to the show notes. One thing you did a lot as a kid that you wish you could do more nowadays. What would that be?
That's a good question. I think I loved competing as a kid, like anything. And that's what, like, even when I was like in college, like going to parties, like it's competing at college games, whatever that is. Like, I always loved competing, and I played basketball a ton as a kid. I think that's probably it, honestly. Like, I love the camaraderie behind like a good pickup basketball game.
That's awesome. All right. One bad habit you're actively working on, Ron.
It's probably sugar and coffee. Like, I've gotten better. Like, I used to do too much Starbucks, and now it's just like, okay, I put honey now in my coffee. So sugar in my coffee is what I'm trying to eliminate.
All right. A couple more here. Who would you recommend to have on this podcast and why?
Our COO would be a good one. Anthony is I love Anthony from what his perspective on what he's done with this business, yeah. And where he's come from, going from, he was commuting in California about 2 hours while he was doing his land business. And then he randomly got a call from us one day to come and fly to Ohio. I think he'd have a very interesting perspective.
Awesome. Yeah. If you don't mind, I'll connect with you afterwards about that. Maybe you can get us connected here. You've been awesome to interview, Ron. I've really enjoyed the conversation. We've went a little bit over time here, and I still have you on, like, as an image on this bus, like, really figuring this out. And I feel like they should make a movie about you. How can people reach out to you? I know you guys are quite present online, and you guys got your education. How can people engage with you? How can they find more about you?
Ron Apke, APKE on Instagram, Land Investing Online on YouTube. We try to post a lot of free content. Like, that's the issue. That's one of the hurdles getting in this business is the cost of education. We try to really give access to free education to give people that freedom that we were talking about.
Yeah. You guys have an amazing podcast and YouTube channel too. I've checked it out before. So thank you for all the content that you put together and the value you bring to the community. So make sure you guys check that out. Ron, it's been a pleasure getting to know you, getting to chat with you. I hope to have you guys back on in the future. So thank you so much for coming on the show.
Thank you, Jesse.
Bye.
Bye.
Before you stop this episode or hit the next episode, I want to personally thank you for listening to this episode of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast by Pebble. If you found this helpful, we'd greatly appreciate any awesome reviews and ratings on whichever platform you are listening to this on. And if you have 2 minutes and wanted to step it up even more and help others, feel free to share this in other Facebook groups or pages or any communities, giving others a heads up of the Land Investing Business Secrets podcast or the specific episode that may help them on their land investing journey. Once again, thanks so much for listening, and catch you on our next episode.